Are you guys ready to record this whole thing all over again?
I didn't care for it. I didn't buy it.
That seems pretty ridiculous.
I don't even want to think about the possibility of you having your dick out.
Yikes.
Is this the most important thing in the universe? What happened to it? I don't know.
I needed to suck in absolutely every moment of awesomeness.
Yeah.
Hey there, welcome back to another great episode of the Geek Legacy Podcast. David here with Justin, but Randy's still like, I can't go, I don't have internet. All that bullshit, but that's okay, we got Will again, so it's going to be a much better show. It's going to be a fun show, because the show's all about stuff we should be super happy and super excited about, but I'm just kind of, it's news. But Justin, how are you doing today?
I'm good, but how does Randy not have internet? Homeless people have internet.
Well, I think he's like a step below homeless. Like
he's like, in between, actually.
He's got two homeless right now, actually.
Yeah.
Neither one's got internet. Randy, it's bullshit. We know it's bullshit.
Yeah, he's milking that one.
He's too tight. How you doing, Will?
I'm doing great. And man, the homeless guys on my street, they take cards now, so there's no excuse about internet.
They got iPhones, they got Square.
Yeah.
It's nuts.
Yeah. It is not. But Randy, hopefully, maybe he'll be back next week. But we didn't scare Will off, so he'd agree to come back for his second lashing. And, you know, it hurts a lot less the second time. You're a little
go
more dialed.
Punishment.
Yeah.
I'm loosened up.
Yep. You're agape, as it were.
But you picked a great week to come, because we got the penultimate episode of Game of Thrones, which is always the, oh my God, holy shit, I can't believe that happened episode. And some shit happened, so I guess we'll start with Justin. What did you think of the episode as a whole? Or did this live up to the hype of, you know, episodes like Hardhome and Battle of the Blackwater and Deceptive Baelor, where Ned loses his head?
I don't think it quite ranks up with those, but a lot did happen, and it's weird because I feel like, I don't want to say too much happened, but I don't understand how everything played out as quickly as it did, if that makes sense.
Gendry is really fast.
Justin. Yeah. And the birds fly really fast. And I get the dragons
fly fast.
Yeah, dragons definitely can fly fast. I'll give them that. But it just seemed weird that it happened as quickly as it did. And this whole season has been all about fast travels and beaming people left and right. And it just sort of took something away from it. I don't know. Not that I can say that it's I can call it a fake show all I want, but there was nothing grounded about this episode. It was just so just off the wall, like crazy, that maybe it didn't hit as well with me as it should have. There were a lot of moments that I did like, sort of the little conversations that were happening beyond the wall I thought were fantastic. But That's pretty much it, and I feel like we've been waiting for this to happen. I think for a year now, you've been telling me about dragon's gonna die, and freaking the Night King is gonna be riding around on a dragon, all cool like, and we're almost there. You almost pegged it pretty hardcore, but in the end, it was still a fun episode. A lot happened. I was like, holy shit, after it was over. But I don't think it ranks as high as some of the other penultimate episodes.
No, fair enough. What do you think? What did you think about the episode as a whole, Will?
I had a lot of fun. I think I wasn't on the edge of my seat as much as I had been for those previous penultimate series episodes, like the Hardhome battle, where I didn't really know what to expect. Because I think now, and maybe it's the way I've watched the show, as I've tried to digest everything I could in content of people talking about Game of Thrones outside of the show. And so all these kind of last run into the final season has to really come together really quickly. And so that's where we're getting all this rushing, and pieces are just falling together because of the story, whereas they're not as surprising as they used to be. We kind of have an overall idea of where everything's going to kind of come into one big final battle. And so these were kind of the moves that had to happen, like the dragon, of course. Come on. That's incredible, but the way they visualized it, but I kind of had to expect that they were going to balance that out at some point.
Do you think that the show's becoming too predictable?
That's my first note to talk about, actually.
Too predictable. Yeah, I mean, I heard quotes of people saying that George R. R. Martin's frustrated with, and maybe Dan and Dave have been frustrated with fans guessing major plot lines you know, definitely what George hasn't written yet and how he wanted to end certain things, because it, you know, they alluded to it in the show and then fans elaborated off of that to determine things that were going to be big reveals for the books. Mm-hmm. So that's a little frustrating, because then it's so much has been spoiled to how the show's going to end, because there's just so many logical conclusions that have to happen.
Right. So are the fans writing the show, or are George R. R. Martin and Benioff and Weiss writing it? It's crazy.
Yeah, I think with D&D, you're just letting everybody just kind of write the fan fiction. It's all fan service. You know, because George R. R. Martin was all about, like, subverting fantasy tropes. You know, you think this is the good guy, he's going to... He gives us Ned Stark, the most noble, most honorable man in the universe. You know, nothing can go wrong. And the Lannisters turn on him in a second and cut his fucking head off. You know, there was so many twists and turns in the Martin era of Game of Thrones. And, you know, we give him shit for taking too long to get places. But because he took so long, when you got these reveals and these reunions, it really felt like it meant something. I mean, we're getting so many reunions this episode. I mean, this season, that a lot of them feel rushed and like that we haven't earned them. And, you know, no one would have predicted the Red Wedding before they read it. You know, just all of a sudden this whole family is going to get murdered. to where it seems like Weiss and Benioff they're kind of playing it like more like a straight narrative television show, which isn't, I mean, I'm enjoying it. I'm not complaining. It just seems that last season forward, there seems to be this sharp turn away from kind of subverting and, you know, going a different direction with fantasy tropes, to where now it's just Jon Snow's the hero. Jon Snow is going to sit on the Iron Throne at the end of the next season. You know, what that means, whether there is an Iron Throne or whatever, Jon Snow will be the eventual winner of the Game of Thrones.
I think when you say that definitely leads into all the main kind of topics Tyrion had this episode with succession plans. Was perhaps biggest clues towards Dany's possibility of not being the final seat on the throne.
Yeah, to where I have to imagine if we just had the books up until this point, I imagine there would be so many more possibilities, you know, to where they Weiss and Benioff have kind of painted themselves into this corner to where it can really only be Jon Snow or Daenerys. And now that they've really been hammering home that, you know, we used to think fire and ice was the two of them, but now we know that Jon himself is fire and ice. And they've been really hammering that home in this series and really foreshadowing a lot of stuff. And we'll get to the dragon foreshadow in a little bit, but it just seems like the show, like you said, Justin, is just, it's very predictable, which isn't to say it's not enjoyable. It's just, we can see the end game. You know, the next episode will end with the wall coming down, because they've been laying the seeds.
Right.
Now that we have Ice Viserys dragon, he's going to be the one to bring the wall down. And I think that's shitty. Like, if it ends up being that they needed the dragon to take the wall down, it kind of makes almost the entire series useless, because we were led to believe this threat from the north, and we have to get ready and defend from the threat of the north. Well, we didn't. If we just sat back and did nothing, they couldn't have got past our wall. We gave them the weapon to take down the wall. This is our fault. So whether or not they make it toward this is just the Night King's genius plan, all of a sudden there are dragons back in this world, and he's like, oh, shit, I can use one of these. Let me rile up all these folks so they come and get me. They'll bring a dragon. I'll kill it. I'll take control, and I can take down this fucking wall.
Mm-hmm. All right, so question.
Matt Ravings.
Okay, so I had written down a few things that struck me as weird, or maybe even, I dare say, a flaw in the show. But
no,
if the zombie bear bit the guy and killed the guy, would he turn into an undead guy, or is that something that the Night King has to actually do?
Are you, I think it has to be a walker, okay, or so the Night King.
So it's not like a
traditional... he can raise. I think the Night King can raise any dead.
Okay.
Yes.
Like to where if he just raises his hands, he can reanimate anybody. Okay. And I don't know if all the White Walkers have that, because we have the Night King, then we have the White Walkers, which are like Craster's kids that he, you know, touches their side of the face and they become more than, and then we have the undead zombies, the Whites.
Right. Okay. And
I think they were alluding to the idea that the Whites are also turning, or the White Walkers are making their own Whites kind of underneath them. Like a third tier,
right?
Because that's when Jon killed the scouting party, I suppose you call them, and most of the Whites went down with the White Walker.
Sure. And then the copy other one, the copy. Random.
So they're
yeah.
converting too.
And the random one.
Bio white does not kill you.
Okay.
Or make you get resurrected as a warrior.
Okay, fair enough. That's what I need to know. Because otherwise, they could have just brought back their buddy and not gone further. Because they're like, oh, this guy's going to come back to life. Okay, two. Where is the nearest giant chain store to pull up dragons? Like, they just happened to just have these giant chains with them? I thought that was a little weird.
Yeah, they channeled their Les Miserables.
Yeah,
exactly. Action opening scene of the boat.
The boat, yeah, totally.
That was also in my notes that, like, where we get these chains from?
Exactly. And then
isn't it just a rope?
And then the dragon. Now, is it an ice dragon per se, or is it a zombie dragon like the zombie bear?
So
like, I feel like an ice dragon is its own right. special, like, species.
So we've seen the Night King raise things two ways. So we've seen him do his little, like, hand raise, I'm the Undertaker, in SummerSlam, mm-hmm. where he raises the dead. But then we've also seen what he does with, like, Craster's sons, where he touches them, and then they open their eyes, and they have the blue eyes. And so when he, for the dragon, he clearly touched it. Mm-hmm. So I'm hoping that it's not, like, the polar bear was clearly something that was reanimated from death. Mm-hmm. I'm hoping that this is something that he has, it's more a White Walker dragon, to where it's not like the mindless whites that he creates, but it's more like an intelligent creature that he just was able to bring back to life.
Okay.
That's my hopes. And so yeah, in that
it's
case,
still bending to his will, but it's definitely much more than a reanimated dragon by okay. itself.
I mean, Zombie Polar Bear was pretty cool. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
That was a nice surprise.
When it was on fire too, that was pretty badass. And
funny
then,
life.
And then Benjen Stark, Cold Hands. I was a little disappointed that it was literally just him doing sort of here, you take my horse and I'll fend them off, when it was sort of like a Austin Powers kind of moment where the bulldozer was like a billion miles away. You know what I mean? Like I feel like there was enough time for him to hop on the horse and they ride together. Especially since he's sort of in this real, like, a weird in-between sort of state where he has a mind of his own. I don't quite understand why that works the way that it does. We never really get that explanation, at least in the show. So I thought that was a bit of a cop-out for him just to appear out of nowhere, save the day, and then let John ride off.
Right, it was almost yeah. like Weiss and Benioff were like, "Well, we gotta tie up this Benjen Stark loophole here. Let's go ahead and just wrap up his story."
Right. To me,
I can't remember, wasn't mentioned in the after the episode commentary where they talked about how quickly Benjen had to try to convince Jon. So that's why all he did was pull off his face
right.
mask almost immediately, so that way he could see, "Oh, it's my uncle. I trust him at least." And then putting him on, and maybe the no time quote. Was I've heard maybe was that he was saying there's no time to explain that I can't go beyond the wall.
Well, so he could have rid with him to the wall and then just taken his horse back and gone mm-hmm. on more
or to safety at least.
Yeah,
yeah. He bought him almost no die. Time for the like six whites he took down before he got
right.
tackled.
Right, he could have educated him a little bit on what it means to be a White Walker. I don't know. It just seems kind of weird for a show that has a lot of talking. It was weird to kind of not talk at that moment. I don't know. It just seems
right.
strange.
Right. And they had to make a point to, like, he took off his mask so John would trust him. You don't think John Jones getting on any horse that shows up? I don't care who's on that horse.
Right?
Yeah.
Someone shows up on a horse that says, hop on. You get on the horse with whoever.
Yeah.
He's going to be like, ooh, who are you? I don't trust masked guys.
Right. It could have been a total Terminator, come with me if you want to live kind of moment. But whatevs. That just struck me as weird.
Yeah, I think they're just
and is Cold Hand's horse not also undead?
And this one did not appear to be. I thought it was.
The one that he saved Sam or saved Bran, maybe that it was kind of.
It was an undead horse. Yeah,
undead horse.
This one was regular. A la carte.
You got better.
Yeah,
I was gonna say how easy that would be if Benjen's horse was also some sort of white or reanimated beast to yeah. bring the horse through the wall.
Yeah.
And there's your example.
Yeah, I'm a borrow you for a minute.
Yeah,
totally. Maybe unless they melt
yes, in a bone
when they go south.
I think the only time I was really worried during the episode, the only time I felt genuine concerned for someone was when I thought Tormund was going to die.
Absolutely,
oh, that was bad.
Yeah,
because I'm like, Tokyo Tournament, Tokyo Tournament, because he had, like, the best lines with everybody. And he was talking about, like, he's like, how do you guys stay warm? He's like, we just keep moving. He's like, walking's good, killing's better, fucking's best. He's like, I don't see a woman. There's thousands of miles. You make do with what you got.
it looks at Gendry.
Or are you talking about soft. Him and Brienne making these big, giant babies?
Yeah, oh, taking over the world. Yeah. No, that was perfect.
That was great, too, for the Hound and that interaction. Mm-hmm. You're with Brienne fucking Tarth or something.
Yeah, Brienne fucking Tarth. You know her.
Yeah.
Or no, he says something. He says something like negative.
Like she wants you to do eat know. You.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, she looked at me like she wanted to eat my liver or something like that. Like, oh, you do know her.
Yeah, and that's another thing. Like, so Tormund, he was actually vulnerable for like the first time ever. You know, he's screaming for help. And that's not that's very out of character for him. Even before that, you get kind of set up for that too, where he's really just genuinely afraid because he compares Jon to Mance. And, you know, he says he was the king beyond the wall. He never bent the knee to anybody. And it was his pride that got him killed and a lot of the people that followed him. Mm-hmm. And you're expecting a reaction like that from somebody else, not from him. So that was kind of unsettling. Yeah, absolutely. So he's definitely afraid of what's the future holds. And I think that Beric brought up a really interesting point in that, you know, death is the enemy and we're going to lose, but you always got to fight it. I thought that was fantastic.
Yeah, Beric and Jorah had the really good observations this episode about learning about something for the Army of the Dead for once.
Yeah.
In that Jorah noticing the White Walker going down and all of his underlings just collapsing. And so, you know, maybe we could just focus on them and we have a chance. You know, that was one suggestion. Obviously, that wasn't enough because they stayed back so far.
Yeah.
But then Beric's, you know, suggestion that, well, obviously then we just got to take down the king and then that's the only chance. With that in mind, when Dany arrived with the dragons and they have three dragons, why couldn't they just give her the tip, hey, just kill that guy right there?
they need giant arrows like the people that advertise in parking lots to point to go to, like, your store.
And spin his little sign towards the...
Yeah. It's like we were talking about. A cell phone fixes all of it. He's dialed, just tweets to Danny, like, hey, kill the guy.
Totally.
But we did see him after he killed Viserys when he was walking to throw one at Drogon. There was that wall of fire, and he walked right through it.
Yeah,
so, I mean, it's possible. Maybe he's immune to... We know the Dragonglass will kill him. Well, we don't know what will kill the Night King.
He, like, just puts out fire, yeah.
Yeah, we're assuming that, like the White Walkers, the Dragonglass and Valyrian Steel can kill him.
Mm-hmm.
But doesn't look like fire... It. A problem for him.
Yeah.
So that's probably the next, like, big question of mine is, yeah, so what would officially kill the Night King? But then also, now that he's got a dragon mount, what do you do to a undead dragon or a White Walker dragon, I suppose, if that's more accurate? How do you take that down?
Dragons gotta fight dragons, man.
Yeah.
So that's where I'm a little frustrated that I thought for sure Drogon was gonna be the one to go. It'd be a little harder logistically because she obviously arrived on Drogon. But we just have so much more of a connection to Drogon that if he went down, that would just be that much more devastating to all the fans. And then it would also be a better match, I think, to have the larger dragon pitted against the two smaller dragons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Drogon is significantly bigger than Viserys or Rhaegal.
It's like an Arnold Schwarzenegger, Danny DeVito twin situation. Like, Drogon got all the good vitamins and the... And then all the leftover crap went to the other dragons.
This does kind of put to end like the idea of the three heads of the dragon, with Tyrion being a closet Targaryen. Some people are theorizing that Super Bran and his super warg powers will eventually skin change, because warg is wolf specific. Mm-hmm. Change into some form of dragon, and Tyrion will ride him, but.
Wow.
Sounds dirty when I say it like that. But I think that Jon Snow will ride Rhaegal, and I think it'll be Jon Snow on Rhaegal versus the Night King on Viserys, and we'll get some, hopefully some sweet, sweet dragon action.
I guess to throw Bran in there again as a possibility to help defend against the Night King's dragon, was we saw evidence of the Night King and Bran having somewhat similar abilities, or at least being able to know each other through kind of green sight. And so Bran gets kind of grabbed by the Night King, just kind of wandering around looking at the army. And then the Night King, just with his stare, scatters all of Bran's ravens or crows or whatever they are. So maybe there's a chance that Bran can also interrupt the Night King's connection over something he's controlling. And so if they can kind of crash the dragon down or something, there's a chance.
Like Harry Potter interrupt it.
Yeah.
There you go.
I was thinking like Professor X and how he just puts his hand to his forehead and he's like thinks really hard.
Yeah. Like, you have to do it with your hand. You can't just think.
That's how you show it on camera that he's thinking. If he just closes his eyes and he's just like, is he asleep? What the fuck?
Just like Gendry is the only one that could think of wearing a hat in the north.
Yeah.
So freaking Bran, we have him. He's a humorless dick. Now we got Arya. She's a humorless dick. And Sansa, she's a humorless dick. What the hell, man? All these Stark dudes are like fucking boring all of a sudden.
Arya is turned into a bit of a creeper. I don't think I like her in her current state. I don't like how she's just sort of dextering the set with like faces and shit in her bag.
Yeah.
Laying a plastic down and stuff, yeah.
I don't
get
it.
We saw the faces. I don't know. Like
that was
in like
a little weird.
A little like
Mission Impossible.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was like in like a little briefcase. Just had faces in there.
Yeah. I don't think that was too I don't think they know where they're going with that. It seems way too forced to have this conflict between them. And it makes no sense in that if they would just have a dialogue about where did you get that letter? Oh, I got it from Littlefinger's mattress. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like if they would just sit down and talk for a second, they would be able to figure out in 3 seconds that Littlefinger is the piece of shit in this story.
Well, it only took them 3 seconds to revert back to how they behaved when they were children.
Yeah. So dumb.
Yeah.
And like,
Arya even says that, what would Jon say? Oh, Jon will understand. Well, he's the fucking king. He'll understand. You should understand. I mean, how hard is it to understand? Like, your dad was alive. She thought she was trying to save her dad. My only hope is that next episode, she orders Arya to execute Peter Baelish, and we just end this, and then we reunite the Stark kids.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want them to lure this out for an entire 8th season. I love Baelish, but he's got to go. Otherwise, Winterfell is just a total slog that I have no interest in.
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure how to interpret Peter Baelish's introduction into that conflict, I guess, because I'm not sure. So I've heard one theory is Arya and Sansa are actually just playing Peter Baelish right now, and they're actually producing this fake comet conflict to root him out, to show that he's the one like trying to manipulate them, which I would like, because that sounds like gives him a little more credit and kind of makes what all the forced conflict seem that much more understandable. But then the other confusing part for me was, so he tells Sansa that Brienne has to defend both the Stark girls, so she'd be like, it would protect one Stark girl if she tried to kill the other. So does that mean Sansa was supposed to interpret that to mean Brienne would defend Arya if she tried to have Arya killed because Arya's creeping her out, or vice versa, Brienne would defend Sansa from Arya? I couldn't figure that out. But then, of course, she just sends her away. So
there's
nothing to happen with that idea at all.
See, I interpret it as that if Sansa needed to move against Arya for any reason, she wouldn't be able to with Brienne in Winterfell. That Brienne would intercede and somehow like unite them against Baelish, especially since Brienne's no fan of Baelish. So she sends her away. So if for whatever reason, like I don't think she plans on moving against Arya, but if she needed to, she knows that she can do it with Brienne's not there. But if Brienne's there, that she can't.
Mm-hmm. She's prepared for all possibilities, like he told her.
What's interesting for me is that I feel like Jon is the only one that's ever gotten like sound advice throughout the show. He's had a lot of different mentors and father figures sort of enter his life, and they've all told him really solid nuggets of wisdom. You know, he's had Ned, he's had Mormont, Mance, Tormund, Davos, even Jorah now, Stannis, Beric,
and Tyrion. For the first couple episodes.
Yeah, he's the only one that's given a real shot at understanding the way the world works.
Well, I think what it is, I think that since he came from such a shit place as a bastard, I think he listens. I think everyone else has been given the advice, but they think they know best.
Mm-hmm. He's
like,
open to
especially
it.
Like Rob. Like, Rob Stark just thought he knew best, and he didn't listen. You know, he executed the Karstarks and the Umbers, to where Jon he actually, I mean, he brought the Wildlings back. You know, any of the other Stark kids would have just executed Mance and been done with it. But, you know, John, because he's used to having to, like, figure things out, he's not having anything handed to him, he actually has to listen to the advice.
Mm-hmm. He's definitely more realistic about the odds than everybody else is.
So, but okay,
it's frustrating that Sansa and Arya, like, neither will give any credit to the other for what they've been through, because they won't talk about it. So they both think that they've been through the worst thing and give no credit to anybody else.
Okay, let's lay down a couple bold predictions for next week's episode. Next week we see that everyone's coming together in King's Landing, and we're going to have Daenerys, Jon Snow, Tyrion, we're going to have the Lannisters, we're going to have the Greyjoys, going to have the Hound and the Mountain in the same place at the same time, Tormund and Brienne in the same place at the same time. What do you think is going to happen, Will? Give me a safe prediction and a bold prediction.
Yeah, so I'm wondering, because of how close Danny and John have got over this season, really, since the get-go, because they met so quickly, how that's going to look, because they are going to clearly look united against Cersei. It's going to put Cersei probably even more on edge than she had expected, probably, going into this meeting. So I'm really curious to see how, as Tyrion was trying to warn Danny about, how Cersei's going to try to make these very calculated digs at their personalities or spirits, or just hit them hard, but very tactfully. So it'll be interesting to see if John can keep Danny cool or vice versa, because they both know the real odds now.
Mm-hmm. So do you think they're going to go to Bone Town?
I think that could happen. I think that's what all the succession plan and Jorah saying, give it to your children, and Danny saying, the dragons are my children, the only ones I'll ever have, as in, like, foreshadowing, I might have more children.
Dun, dun, dun.
But I don't know how the conversation ends at this big meeting. Like, is it going to end in a fight? Like, probably not the Clegane Bowl, but
I wish.
I feel like Cersei is, even though she's outnumbered and outmatched, she's very much controlling the situation. That she's the one that they have to sway. And somehow she's going to find a way to come out on top and hurt Camp Daenerys.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that they're able to sway Jaime, but I think Cersei, she's too far gone. There is no happy ending for Cersei in this tale. Something will happen, like she'll ask for people to bend the knee, and Jon Snow will make some public declaration about that he's only going to bend the knee to Dany or something like that, and she'll go off in a huff, and they'll plot and plan, and Jaime will be like, well, I'm going to go fight the whites at the wall. And she's like, you'll do no such thing. And then they'll have some kind of bad breakup. and then Ice Viserys will take down the wall. I think the wall has to come down.
Oh, yeah.
They've just been foreshadowing how impregnable the wall is for so long. Mm-hmm. I think that I thought it was going to be when the Night King touched Bran that he had got the super devil juice and he was going to be able to walk through. But now that we got dragons, I think he's just going to obliterate the wall.
It's going to be
one dragon and I'll impregnate the bitch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For Bran.
It'll have a clip of Reagan saying, Gorbachev, bring this wall down or tear that wall down.
I can already see the memes.
I'm kind of wondering if, in the cutting remarks that I'm fully expecting Cersei to dish out during the conversation, if one of the fiery, I guess, impulsive moves that's going to happen is Dany makes some sort of large gesture towards Jon and say, well, actually, I have a king as well.
Ooh.
And maybe that will be like a, he'll be surprised that she'll make this, like, oh, we're in a relationship now? Okay, I guess so.
It's like, whoa, I don't... Look, it's mad.
But I could see her, I could see Danny getting pushed into that, where there's some sort of claim of you don't have enough, or we're all split up. And
I'm thinking Cersei says, oh, I thought you had three dragons.
Ooh, yeah.
Burn.
Do you think Danny will somehow use that to her advantage? Like, you don't know where my third dragon is. Or do you think that's the ultimate trump card. Like, I only see two dragons. You're right, you do.
Yeah.
So that's probably some big questions, I guess, just ending that last episode, and hopefully that they're addressed this next episode, is they've seen the undead bear, they've seen all the, you know, reanimations of everybody that dies, so did they not had a conversation about your dragon died within sight of the Night King. Do you think we might have to deal with your reanimated dragon near future?
I think it'll be a 100% like surprise.
It's going to be a toy surprise.
Yeah.
Right. Like they maybe don't think it's possible. Yeah. I think that
it's too strong or something, or too big.
Too big, too old to complete the training.
And the second question was, nobody's actually talking officially about, besides John mentioning we need dragon glass for weapons, to say, this is my dragon glass weapon I made to bring to this journey north. Because I look like Tormund's weapon was definitely dragon glass. It was some sort of axe that looked like it had really jagged edges, like it was rock.
Yeah.
And then Jor was using his knives and stuff.
Right, and then I wasn't sure if the hammer was supposed to be dragon glass.
I don't think it was. So that's why I figured that's why the hound just ditched it.
And Jorah had he had like little dumb knives. Like
that was weird.
He was like buttering bread with those things.
Yeah. I noticed that I didn't put two and together that it must have been dragon glass until Will Eda said that, but yeah, that's probably what it was, because I'm like, why is he using these like small little daggers? And I noticed Tormund, he had the real cool, like, standard, like, great axe at the beginning. Mm-hmm. And then when they were on the precipice, whatever thing they were fighting on, he had switched to what looked like a much uglier axe. And I'm assuming it was just a stick with a bunch of dragon glass.
That's what I figured.
It was the
But I was just waiting for one conversation like that, so that way it can kind of tie into, well, we know we're going to have to deal with this ice dragon, or hopefully somebody mentions that they have to worry about that. And they can convert Cersei's scorpions into dragon glass launching
throwers,
death
throwers. Dragon glass spears. I think that they'll definitely, I mean, it would behoove them to, like, for him to use Longclaw to kill the White Walker and it like fall apart. But see, the thing is, only like the honest to goodness White Walkers like turn into nothing. All the undead mm-hmm. guys are just regular people, so it's weird, like it has no real effect on them. I feel like you can kill them with anything.
Mm-hmm.
Versus like the shatter glass effect, yeah. So the dragon glass gives the shatter effect to the like the bearded white dudes, but the irregular undead guys just fall by the wayside.
I wonder if like dragon glass kills them forever, and then like they're still vulnerable to like being stabbed and cut in half and stuff like that. But that they could be brought back. I don't know. We're playing by different rules now.
Yeah, everything was a one hit punch on that hill.
Yeah.
But I was totally in, like, Walking Dead mode. Like, don't let them touch you!
Yeah, I know.
They're going to turn you. You know, I've been pretty critical of Emilia Clarke and Daenerys in general. But this season, I thought she was doing a really good job. Like, I was actually really enthralled. I thought that her acting has gotten a lot better. But when her dragon died, I found her performance lacking. Like, she didn't really... I mean... She was saying words that made me know that she was sad, but she wasn't emoting. She's kind of got this stone cold acting down, and I was hoping that it would like lower the shields around her a little bit, and she'd be a little more animated, like, you know, almost like teetering on losing control,
right,
and like almost ordering like Drogon, like, burn these fuckers.
You got that. You kind of got that vulnerability when they were on the boat at the end. Yeah. You know, she looked like she was ready to cry. That entire conversation.
She's maybe just really good at staying composed in the moment.
Yeah, she's always had to be
like
a
to a fault.
Yeah,
where Danny maybe didn't show enough emotion when they're having that final conversation. He's holding her hand. Bobby next to me, my fiance, actually adamantly believed that John had just died and let out last breath as he's staring at her because he's making no movement. And then she kind of pulls away from his hand and he kind of blinks, and so. That was a surprising dead stare. He was supposed to be his, like, love face.
Yeah.
He pulled a Daniel Stern and pretended to be asleep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly, like City Slickers.
Yeah. You pretend to sleep at my birthday.
Yeah. He took that deep breath and he's like, oh, yeah, I'm out. She's like, you need rest. He's like, oh, yeah, thanks for reminding me. Just sighs and then passes out. He had a lot of holes in his chest.
You did. You think those would heal? Mm-hmm. Guess not. Mm-mm. I guess the Lord of Light can bring you back from death, but just can't plug the holes in your chest.
No, that's why Beric has like face damage.
That's true. He lost an eye and stuff. There was a real great like featurette about the making of that battle. and it was crazy because they had all the cast and they were interviewing them all, and it just tripped me out because like the Hound and Tormund were given these like super frank, honest, fun interviews, and it was so weird to see like the Hound like joking around and having a good time because he's in full makeup, you know, he's clearly in between takes, but he's just having a time of his life telling funny stories, and it was just so off-putting. He's just so good as the Hound. I'm like, oh, this is weird. It's definitely worth checking out. But yeah, it was a fun episode. But anything else, Will, you got on this episode?
No, I don't think so. I think we talked it through. That was fun, though.
Yeah, it was a definitely fun episode. I liked all the interplay. Like the talking. All the talking. Mm-hmm. I guess I just like Game of Thrones talking. I don't like the action. But we find in news that everyone saw coming months and months and months ago, that was finally confirmed. Disney has finally announced that they will be making an Obi-Wan Kenobi standalone film, and nerds everywhere went, "Yeah, duh."
Yeah. Does he make the sweet love to the sand people? And he gets one pregnant, and then he doesn't want to be the daddy, and he's a daddy. He's like, "Oh, I'm gonna go get some lottery tickets," and then goes build a hut out in the middle of the desert, and then. Now he's just banned from the village, and that's why he knows so much about him. But
he's just yelling at Sam, able to get off his lawn.
Yeah, getting some smokes.
I'm convinced that all the sand people are just a bunch of beautiful women underneath those rags.
Oh, you're probably right.
Sand nymphs.
Yeah,
the ones that have taken off their clothes are all drawn pretty seductively in the comics.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, no, unfortunately, at this moment, there's no word on whether Ewan McGregor will come back. He's obviously said he would love to come back, and seeing as he was one of the bright spots of the prequel trilogy, and everyone seems to really enjoy him, it would be silly not to. So yeah, hopefully he'll come back. The Billy Elliot director, whose name just totally escaped my brain 2 seconds ago, is in talks to direct it. If so, that would be great because he's a real character-driven. He did The Reader, a couple other films that are real character introspective to where I would love to see a movie where Obi-Wan is on Tatooine. He learns of this something off-world, but he's kind of vowed to stay on Tatooine to watch over Luke. And so it's kind of like this internal struggle, like, is Luke safe at this moment to where he can leave him for X amount of weeks to go take care of what he has to do off world? And I would really like to see the conflict within Obi-Wan Kenobi. I don't want to see just Obi-Wan hanging out on Tatooine because I think there is a story to tell about Obi-Wan, but we're kind of walking a fine line. So Will, what kind of Obi-Wan story would you want to see?
Yeah, I was thinking about that so much.
Stephen Daldry is the guy you were thinking of.
There you go.
I looked.
So with potential Ewan McGregor, I guess that would set in stone potentially the timeline or what age of Obi-Wan we're looking at, because I wasn't sure if I would want to watch Obi-Wan just hanging out on Tatooine for 18 years, kicking the sand people off of his lawn. So I was kind of wondering if it would be maybe more interesting to see him, if there's any pre-Qui-Gon Jinn time that was exciting, if there was any adventures. Because he's already fairly well skilled, and so it's hard to see a challenge coming up to him when he's already finished with Anakin and those battles, because that's kind of a high bar to reach again. So I was having a hard time picturing what force or foe would come against this older, more wise Obi-Wan. So if we're not going to put any kind of Sith option on the table, then I wasn't really sure where to go from there.
One of the most impactful expanded universe tales about Obi-Wan Kenobi is when he finds out that Anakin's alive. And so, you know, sure, he doesn't see Anakin die in Mustafar, but Obi-Wan is under the impression that he left his best friend and brother to die on that planet. And so when he learns that Anakin is not only alive, but that he's Darth Vader, it becomes this mix of emotions. Like, on one hand, he's happy that his friend is not dead, and so maybe there's like this sliver of hope that, you know, his friend can atone for what he did and come back to the light side of the Force. But on the other side, there's this dread because Obi-Wan has failed Anakin again, and now he's made this monstrosity. So while I don't want Vader to necessarily be the villain, just because I think it would neuter their interaction in episode 4, I like the looming threat of maybe someone one of Vader's Inquisitors that are hunting down the Jedi stumbles across, like, this small nest of Jedi younglings off-world, and Obi-Wan catches wind of it and has to go save them. Like, he intercepts some Imperial transmission. With the announcement of Kenobi, we learned that Lucasfilm is also kicking around the idea for several other standalone movies. You know, we learned about the Boba Fett movie. You know, obviously Josh Trank was going to direct it before shit hit the fan. A Yoda standalone movie. Even rumors of some weird, weird Jabba the Hutt like gangster movie.
With Tommy guns and hats.
I definitely, and fedora. Yeah, I definitely think that's the way they were going. Is this Disney telling us they're not interested in telling original stories with different characters and that we should stop asking for the Old Republic? Is this Disney saying, hey, we bought this franchise for $4.5 billion. We're going to milk the shit out of it until people are tired of it, and then it's going to go away.
It feels like that, man.
I
don't understand why they are not tapping into countless resources and amazing different stories for across thousands of years. What isn't it like? Like 2,000 years or 5,000 years in the Old Republic compared to the events that happen now. So, I mean, they could literally come up with anything that they want. And it's weird that they are just milking this 20-year timeline. It makes no sense to me whatsoever.
Yeah, and they seem hell-bent on sticking between Episode 3 and Episode 4.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, obviously 7, 8, and 9 will be passwords from the Jedi, but there's so much happening between 3 and 4. I just don't know why they wouldn't. I mean, even if you wanted to do a Yoda movie, you can set a Yoda movie 800 years in the past, and he's still 100 years old. He can still be a Jedi Master. You know, we would know nobody except Yoda, and it could be a great way to introduce us to new characters. It would be a great way for them to test the waters to see if outside of the Skywalker saga, films without established characters will sell. You know, Rogue One was pretty. It was pretty much new characters, but they kept it grounded with the Death Star, and they brought Vader back. I think the audience is there. I think Star Wars sells enough tickets to where you can take a chance. What do you think, Will?
I would love to see some new characters, because I'm a little tired of having to already know the end game or the end result of any decisions that happened in the span of this movie I'm watching. That was my one frustration with Rogue One, was knowing, all right, this all happened, but I know what happens.
Right.
They can't change how those movies played out. So with Obi-Wan's story, unless they go outside somehow of what we've already seen, like before he gets brought on, there's not a lot of questions I have, because even if there's a movie that happens right after he's done with Anakin, at some point he's going to give up and say, well, now he's a lost cause, obviously, because I tried to kill him, he stayed alive, now he's Vader. And now to focus completely on Luke, so as his kind of shadowy protector. So I don't know.
Yeah.
I'd like some new characters just to have some unawareness of what's going to happen.
I think it would be cool to have show like a Sith Academy, you know, like several thousand years ago.
Corban or something.
Yeah, I think that could be. Really, it might be too dark for Disney, but I mean, Darth Vader was cutting people in half and just mowing down the rebel forces at the end of Rogue One. So, I mean, they know that they can get away with it, and people were cheering and screaming. It was like medieval fucking times when that scene was happening, and everyone's like, rip his head off, and they literally got away with it. So I think that they can sort of explore this untapped resource of what it means to be Sith and sort of these weird characters and all sorts of creepy aliens. And I think even doing that, they can introduce us to all sorts of new races and characters, and it would be fantastic. People would eat that shit up.
Heck yeah. I mean, the Expandiverse is littered with so many amazing Sith. You could use them, or since you've made that all non-canon, you could pick and choose what you like from them. You know, I would love to see a Darth Bane film, you know, a film about Darth Bane and how he went from a Jedi to a Sith and how he established the Rule of Two. And if you ask a lot of people, that's some of their favorite Expanded Universe novels, is the Darth Bane trilogy, just because it's so great to see how he tricked the entire Jedi Order into thinking the Sith were destroyed. And at the same time, he basically destroyed the Sith, and he destroyed half of the Jedi Order in the process. And then he became this badass, just like Phantom, that like was like the thing of nightmares. Yeah. You know, and there's just so much to mine of that. At one point, you know, he stumbles in to this, like, hive, and, like, these parasites just attach themselves to his body, so he's got this, like, living armor on him, and he's just so badass. And there's just so many Sith like that. They could easily be a certifiable and believable villain in any setting. You know, the Jedi Order's fallen, like, three times. I mean, cover something like that. Or just have BioWare make those animated movies they made for the Old Republic. That's good enough.
Oh, that's so good.
I'd watch a feature-length version of that.
Yeah. Like, give me the guy without the jaw. That guy had a lot of fun things to say.
Yeah, give me Darth Malgus and Dark Malak and Revan. I mean, they can almost make almost like a Christ parable out of Kenobi in that, you know, Jesus is born and there's like this huge gap that we don't know about, and then all of a sudden he's like 32. Where these are like the formative Jesus years for Kenobi. You know, we know he goes to Tatooine, and then 20 years later he leaves Tatooine. You know, he needs to get off this fucking planet is what I'm saying. If I can't take any more Tatooine.
Yeah, and you're about to go back to it.
Oh man, no more Tatooine. Even Jakku, it wasn't Tatooine, but it was close enough to Tatooine.
Dude, I'm from the fucking desert. I can't. I get flashbacks every time I see that shit.
You just can't. You can't. Mm.
I grew up here, you know.
You're going to die here. Now, out of standalone movies for established characters, you know, you don't have to pick the ones that were mentioned, the Boba Fett, Yoda, Jabba the Hutt. Justin, what character would you most like to see a standalone movie for?
For ones that we already have and know?
For an established character, because obviously Disney doesn't want to go the route of originality.
Oh, man. I don't...
We're getting Han Solo. We're going to get Obi-Wan.
I don't know. I don't like any character in the Star Wars.
You like Luke?
I do, but I already got my Luke movies.
He was in The Force Awakens, you know?
Yeah. Suppose it. If you pause it at the right time. No, I don't need any more current Star Wars characters. Side stories, backstories, none of that shit. I'm good. I don't need any more standalones from anything in the timeline from the original trilogy. I'm good.
All right, what about you, Will?
I got one.
Who you got?
Admiral Ackbar. More of a mashup. So you'll take an original character from the canon, and you're going to mold him. And so it's going to be Jar Jar Binks is submitted to all of the Saw torture puzzles. And we just watch an hour and a half of that.
That's right.
That would make more money than Avatar. You know, there's actually a large section of Jar Jar Binks collectors.
Wow.
So it's like I have a weird collection. I collect Admiral Ackbar stuff. Like he's my guy. Like I have way more Admiral Ackbar shit than any adult male should have. But I've found in my research in joining weird Facebook groups, I've discovered that there are Jar Jar Binks people who like they love Jar Jar Binks. They collect everything Jar Jar Binks. And
well, supposedly he's behind everything. He's dark Sith Lord. He's like
he's the Phantom Menace.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I guess you know what, a Mace Windu movie would have been kind of cool, you know, like to see him all in power and like his adventure days, or like an Ahsoka Tano, even if it were like a new like an animated feature, like her on her own little adventures. That could be kind of cool, and I do like idea of a bounty hunter-esque kind of movie where they're all after the golden ticket, as it were. There were a hot target and along the lines of like Running Man, where someone is just trying to survive, and all these bounty hunters are after him. I think that'd be kind of cool too.
What about The Empire Strikes Back? Them hunting for Han Solo, told through the eyes of the bounty hunter. Would that interest you?
I was thinking about that. I want to see something that's more complex, because what's always just so light and dark for Star Wars. So if there was a way to make the dark side a little more compelling, like maybe you want to support them for some reason, they have some sort of argument as opposed to just killing everybody.
No disintegrations.
So you kind of get that in the new
Shadows of the Empire.
Yeah, so there's that, and then like even like the new Marvel Star Wars comics that came out, it takes place in between episodes four and five. So there's a lot of sort of Darth Vader and like Darth Vader after Luke Skywalker and bounty hunters after Han Solo, and you know, just sort of feeds into the part where he quits the rebellion and says, "Look, I gotta go, man." And they say, "I understand. You know, a debt isn't an easy thing to live with, or whatever. A price on your head is not an easy thing to live with. You're a good man, Solo. I hate to lose you." These comics sort of explore what he's been going through prior to them being on Hoth, and so we already kind of
Ford Mandel.
Yeah. So, in a sense, you can get that right now if you want.
Oh, okay. I'll check that out.
Interesting.
Yeah, and I'm with you on that one, just where I don't really necessarily want a Boba Fett solo film, but I'd be interested in a bounty hunter movie to where, almost like a Usual Suspects types thing, to where they're like forced to work together even though, you know, they hate each other. Mm-hmm. Like, I can't do this alone, gotta work together as a team type thing. And of course, in the end, everyone double crosses and, you know, wacky mayhem ensues, but it'd be fun to see, give them a little more action.
Sure.
More in the plane of Rogue One, where the characters all have more realistic abilities.
Yeah.
When the Jedis are removed a degree.
Yeah. So, I mean, in the end, it's more Star Wars. I obviously love Star Wars. Name my kid after Star Wars, my dog after Star Wars. I'm sitting next to thousands of dollars of Star Wars shit. So, I guess more Star Wars is good Star Wars. I'm just kind of getting a little disillusioned with Disney's version of Star Wars. Like, say what you want about Uncle George. And a lot's been said about him. He had a clear vision of where he wanted to go. And even though the prequels were poorly executed, if you were to sit there and explain the story of the prequels to someone who had not seen the movies, they would think that was the coolest thing they'd ever heard of, because you would obviously skip over Jar Jar and midichlorians. But if you just told the tale of, like, the rise and fall of Anakin Skywalker, they'd be like, wow, that's a great movie. You should have a religion or something. So I'm just getting this weird vibe from Disney that, you know, obviously this is a business. Disney has to make money, but I mean, it seems like they're just going out of their way to just not milk, give a shit.
Milk that cow. And you know, it's funny because I actually just thought of this. When if they do something with Obi-Wan Kenobi in the timeline of between Episode 3 and Episode 4, he can't make too much of a name for himself, because everyone's so surprised when he resurfaces. They're like, Obi-Wan Kenobi? Surely he must be dead by now. Like, he literally hasn't even been a blip on anyone's radar.
Yeah. But I like that he's made such a name for, like the Clone Wars, Obi-Wan really, really shined in the Clone Wars. I like that he made such a name for himself across the galaxy that even Tarkin in Episode 4 knows who he's talking. Like, Obi-Wan Kenobi? Hey, guy's dead.
Mm-hmm. Maybe he has an alias, like...
Ben.
Yeah. Mm. Ben Kenobi. Oh, I thought you were that other asshole.
That guy owes me money.
Yeah. You look a lot like Obi-Wan Kenobi. Didn't really tell you that?
Are you sure you're not Obi-Wan Kenobi?
He's taller.
Yeah.
Yeah. If I were Obi-Wan Kenobi, what would I be doing here?
Yeah. Surely I'd be banging broads and snorting death sticks.
Mustafar. Speaking of snorting death sticks, Wonder Woman. Actually, I don't know if we haven't got your opinion, Will, on Wonder Woman. I know Justin hated it with the Fire of a Thousand Suns.
Right.
What did you think of Wonder Woman, Will?
I enjoyed the movie. I had a hard time with the overwhelming, like, feminist agenda that I was submitted to on my Facebook feed, but I enjoyed the movie for everything it had. It was very empowering, I would say. But, like, some of the details I saw people tune in on was when she comes down in the final scene, like, crashing onto the pavement in the airport, her thigh jiggled or something, and how inspiring that decision was. I was like, yeah, that would happen.
Science. It happens. It's like, yeah. It's like when that fat guy gets shot with a cannonball. There are ripples.
It's over. He's a true hero.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it. I thought it was a lot funnier than I thought it was going to be for the trend, I guess. It's leading that way for these Marvel movies. They've been putting in little dashes of that. So, yeah, it was fun all around, I thought.
Yeah, you're right, because DC movies tend to be, like, all serious and doom and gloom, and mm-hmm. Wonder Woman was a little ray of sunshine.
And they did a great job with the soundtrack. That was a excellent choice for her theme, I guess.
Yeah, the Georgia of the Jungle drums.
The drums.
Sounds like Mad Max a little bit.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, I think the only complaint I've seen on Wonder Woman is that it takes too long for her to become Wonder Woman. Like the trench scene that's pretty incredible, and I think years to come it'll be one of the more iconic comic book movie scenes. But it takes a while to get there. But I enjoyed it, and a lot of people have enjoyed it because it just passed $800 million worldwide, which puts it ahead of Man of Steel and Suicide Squad by a significant amount. It's probably not going to catch Batman v Superman, Dawn of Justice, the greatest comic movie of all time, because that was at 873, and everyone knows I'm kidding. Batman v Superman was a piece of shit. Sorry, Batman v Superman.
But it's made the most for an origin story. It's the highest Correct. Grossing origin story comic book movie. Originally, it was Spider-Man had held that record since 2002, but if you adjust for inflation, Spider-Man would crush Wonder Woman.
Right. As far as 15 years of inflation.
Yeah.
But it's all good news. You know, Patty Jenkins has officially signed on to direct Wonder Woman 2. Obviously, Gal Gadot is going to return because that's what she does.
Of course.
I have to imagine the sequel will make even more money. The word of mouth on the first Wonder Woman was just incredible. Like Will was saying, my Facebook feed was just littered with, you name it. Mm-hmm. And so it'll be coming back. Kind of pivoting off of the Wonder Woman theme, did you guys see Casey Affleck's comments about Ben Affleck being Batman?
Mm-mm. No.
So Casey Affleck was out promoting something. I don't follow Casey Affleck movies as much as I probably should. He was promoting something, and they asked him about Ben Affleck and Batman, and his answer was, oh, I don't think he's going to do that.
What?
And so instantly, like, the reporter, like, just, like, freezes and is like, dude, I just got something here. And so they kind of go down the rabbit hole, and he's like, yeah, he's not going to do that movie. And then he's quickly whisked away by his agent, who I'm sure just screamed at him for saying something so stupid. His agent comes back and, you know, says, oh no, he didn't really know what he's talking about. Affleck's agent goes into overdrive saying he doesn't know what he's talking about. We haven't really heard from Ben. All we're getting are these innocuous kind of like, of course he would love to be Batman, or Batman's his favorite character. No assertions of Ben Affleck is definitely going to be Batman and Matt Reeves the Batman. So it's kind of crazy that his brother would have made some kind of comment like that. Like, he was clearly talking from a place of, he obviously knew something he wasn't letting out. So that's fucking interesting, man.
That is.
Wow.
And, I don't know what to make about it. I'm just tired of reporting on this negative Batman stuff. No. Like, Batman's cool. Tired of all this drama that Affleck seems to be bringing to this part. I love Ben Affleck to death, but do you think it's too much drama, Justin? Is Affleck too much of a distraction? Is this a Geely situation all over again?
Oh, I hope not. I do. It's weird because I felt like he set the record straight at Comic-Con when he was saying, you know, I would be, you know, a complete asshole if I didn't want to do this movie. And if I didn't want to play Batman, it's like the greatest character, and I'm honored to be a part of it, and blah, blah, blah. I thought that quashed all this rumors of him leaving, even with the Flash movie being announced as Flashpoint, so they could literally wipe away the Snyderverse. That was definitely a lot of weight off of everyone's shoulders, and now I feel like this just put it back on tenfold.
I don't know. But, yeah, is this the distraction wheel? Are we just over Batman drama stories and too much Batman drama, not enough Batman stuff?
Yeah, I wonder, just right from the get-go on the announcement that he was going to be Batman, there was so much negative press about that idea. But I enjoyed him as Batman.
Yeah, badass.
I thought he did a good job. And I would definitely take his report right from his mouth, and I would take his brother's.
Do you think, Will, this is, you know, they're obviously doing extensive reshoots for Justice League, and, you know, word is that it's, you know, to add levity and it's to add Wonder Woman. You know, levity works well for Aquaman. It'll probably work well for Cyborg. It's probably working for The Flash, and we saw that Wonder Woman has no problem with levity. Levity's not so much Batman's thing. Do you think that these are negative comments because he's kind of being not minimized, because Batman will obviously have a big role in Justice League, but he's not getting as much love in the Joss Whedon version of Justice League? Do you think maybe there's some hurt feelings there?
Yeah, I guess he's already kind of playing from behind then, if that's the change in strategy to lighten it up. Because, I mean, they are marketing to quite the diverse group of people now for this series. Going as dark as they had with, you know, previous iterations of the DC movies probably would not bring as many kids as they're hoping this will bring in to match any of the, you know, Guardians of the Galaxy type movies. So that, I guess I could see why he would be potentially frustrated in that his character as a whole doesn't match that mold very well, or the sense of humor doesn't come off the same way. That's challenging.
Yeah, I'm worried. But we got Justice League coming out in November, and I'm assuming that during that press tour, you know, in late October, early November, I'm assuming we'll get a lot more details. A lot more stuff should be locked down. We should have, you know, script locked on the Batman. We should have additional casting. We should know if Joe Manganiello, whatever, is going to be Deathstroke.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
What is his name?
Magdaliano?
Montenegro?
I think it's M-A-G, I think. Magdaliano?
Magdaliano?
Alcide?
Alcide, yeah. We saw him at the Wired Cafe once.
Yeah.
Big fucker.
Big fucker.
Jeez.
Yep.
So, yes, didn't mean to derail the Wonder Woman talk. Wonder Woman's great. Made a bunch of money. Gonna have sequels, gonna make more, but... Justin had a great idea.
What timeline, actually, real quick, about Wonder Woman? What timeline would they do?
Oh, I bet it's a 2020
present day.
Oh, no,
I mean, setting.
Yeah, they had said it was going to be in the '80s, and that Chris Pine will return. I don't know how.
Yeah, old Chris Pine.
He was quite dead.
He'll be a blue ghost.
He's both going to be. It must be a flashback or a dream sequence, because he would be. You know, in the 80s, he'd be 40-something years older and dead.
And dead.
With a wicked case of the dead. But yeah. But Justin had a great idea. What, you want to talk about the genesis of your idea for the greatest action movie of all time?
Sure, Justin? So earlier today, when I was just kind of trolling the internet looking for fun topics, I came across an interesting video where it was talking about what is the greatest action movie ever made. And I immediately clicked on it. I'm like, ooh, I got to see what this is. And the two gentlemen, it's an IGN show, actually, and they talk about Terminator 2. They identified Terminator 2 from 1991. It's like July 3rd, I think, 1991. 4th of July weekend, 1991. It is now 2017. A lot of time has passed. Of all time, if we're going to say the greatest action movie, these guys identify T2. And I don't think that they're wrong. I think that it's a great answer. I watched this 19-minute video, and I'm thinking to myself, this movie was incredible. I loved every second of it. I remember watching it with my grandfather and my cousin. We went to the movies in Merced, California, and I saw this movie and was blown away. And it was incredible. And so right away I'm thinking, what the hell do I think is the greatest action movie ever made? And so I ask you guys, what are your thoughts? And I cannot wait to hear what you... Dave, I feel like I know what your answer is, but Will, I am curious. What do you think is the greatest action movie ever made?
Yeah, I had a hard time kind of coming with one, because I knew top 10, if I had to give you that, I know Schwarzenegger's probably in 5 of them.
Right.
Conan, Terminator, you know, Commando or Predator, name it. And I was definitely watching it every single day if possible when I was growing up. But then I also thought about which ones I've watched the most, probably. Like, I rewatched more regularly, and I think I went for movies that I found to be more quotable. And so I think my runner-up choice was The Rock, Sean Connery, Nicolas Cage. And so I think that some of the quotes in that, I mean, obviously anything Nicolas Cage in there is just out batshit crazy, out ridiculous. And but Sean Connery was my favorite actors growing up as well. Just, I think, introduced to him from Indiana Jones as, you know, the father. And I mean, so I think one of the quotes...
The best Indiana Jones movie.
The best. Definitely the best. I'm with you there. And that was actually on top of my list, too, or like the top 10 for sure. But one of the quotes I found that reminded me of why I love the Rock so much is they're just getting ready to enter the Rock Alcatraz after they've made it on the island. And so Sean Connery turns to Nicolas Cage saying, "You're sure you're ready for this?" And Nicolas Cage like responds, "I'll do my best." And before he was about to climb up this ladder or stairs, Sean Connery turns back to him and says, "Your best. Losers always whine about their best. Winners go home and fuck the prom queen."
But then he's even got a comeback. He's like, "Carla was the prom queen." Like,
touche to that. Obviously, he gave him the tip of the hat. But so much of that movie, you know, I just want to find some rockets.
The guy's feet are twitching. He's like, "Can you do something about that?" He's like, "What do you want me to kill him again?"
He's like, "Dude, you gotta cut me some freaking slack." He's so bad.
But I think I went with one that I maybe quoted way too much in college, which was Dark Knight Rises. And I was one of the, I'm sure, mass of unfortunate college-age men that were just, "I can do a Bane accent." I had the best Bane accent, for sure. And I think I probably rewatched the fight scene in the sewer where it's like the big turning point for Batman getting his ass whooped. And Bane is just monologuing his way through a very easy fight for him. And that was just, I enjoyed so much of the, "So you think darkness is your ally, but you merely adopted the dark. I was born in it, molded by it." And I don't know how much I had to, I'm surprised I still have a fiance after how much I quoted Bane.
I like whenever she's in the other room right now, listening, like, what just happened in there?
Eyes rolled back to the back of her head, I'm sure.
I can hear it all the way in California. Yeah, that's what I got. Well, of your two, I can definitely say The Rock is a very good movie.
I knew that was coming.
Yeah, I didn't really care much for Dark Knight Rises.
It taught me all I needed about chiropractic, though, you know. Break your back, you just do push-ups until it's better. No injury can not be healed by doing a lot of push-ups and watching.
They hold him up and they, like, try and crack his back and hang him from, the wall.
The inversion table? Yeah.
That's the true. Board. The murderers and the thugs were very helpful.
That's true. They're very nice.
And then you can only make the jump. You can only make the jump if you don't have the safety rope. You know? Yeah.
Those are interesting choices, David. Let's talk about your greatest action movie ever made. What say you?
Sure. Well, I took Star Wars out because I don't consider that a straight action movie. Because obviously, Star Wars is my favorite movie of all time. And so we'll kind of beat on it. When I think action movies. You can't get better than Indiana Jones. I mean, that's just pure action. Like, as a genre, that is what I think action is. Just fun, and, you know, it's badass. It's got great score. It's wonderfully directed. Harrison Ford knocks it out of the park. You know, two of the four of them have great female leads. And I really, really... It's a timeless tale. It's like Back to the Future. Like... there will never not be a point where Indiana Jones will resonate with people and people will enjoy Indiana Jones. So that was one of my criteria, that it was timeless. Another one I picked was Lethal Weapon. Like, ooh. When I think action, that's also like a different kind of action. You know, Shane Black wrote it. You know, it's Richard Donner directing. Obviously got Mel Gibson, Danny Glover. I mean, that and Die Hard are kind of my childhood. While watching those movies, those are both just great, and again, they're straight action. They're not trying to be anything different. It's just these dudes, good guys, bad guys, guns, F-words, maybe a boob or two, and everything a growing boy needs in his daily breakfast. So
Lethal Weapon's really dark too. You got one guy who's ready to retire, you got another guy who's just trying to die. You know, he misses his wife, he struggles with mental health and suicide every day of his life, and you put those two together, that's a very interesting combo.
Yeah, and like the series as a whole of Lethal Weapon is that it really grew with us. Like,
right.
Each movie introduces a new character. You know, Lethal Weapon 2, we get Leo Getz, and everyone loves Leo Getz. You know, 3 gives us Rene Russo, Justin's favorite. And, she's got a lot of fun lines where she beats everyone up. She's like, PMS, it's a bitch. And then 4, we get Chris Rock. And I would say all 4 of them are great films that I could watch anytime. There's not a stinker in the bunch, which unfortunately Die Hard can't say with the 5th one, which was not good. But
garbage.
That's got Courtney. What do you expect? So I'll limit mine to 2 since Will only did 2. I wrote down like 7, but...
Oh, no, go for it.
No,
Shut them out.
Can you pick real quick from Indiana Jones and Lethal Weapon? Are you picking numbers out of those as well? Because I know where me and Justin stand, Indiana Jones at least.
Oh, I'm a Last Crusade guy to the core.
Yes.
Randy's a Raiders guy, but the rest of us are all, we're all Last Crusade. Sean Connery is amazing. Last Crusade. Yeah. He's got so many lines and so many lines I didn't get as a kid. When he's like, she talks in her sleep. It's like, how did you know? I'm assuming this next guy. Dad, I was the next guy.
Oh, Eskimo brother and your dad.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I'm definitely a 3. Lethal Weapon, I can watch all of them. They're so great. I really like Leo Getz, but I have to go the original just because that was kind of the first one. I put Jurassic Park on there. I know it's kind of a sci-fi thing, but it's one of my favorite movies of all time. I got The Matrix. It's got some sci-fi elements, but you know, at its heart, it's like a kung fu movie. True Lies,
there's one,
and it's got a real special place in my heart. It was my grandmother's favorite movie. We actually buried her with a copy of her VHS copy of True Lies. She loved it so much. And then
I can't look at Activia anymore after watching True Lies so much because I watched that scene, the striptease scene, way too many times.
Do it.
Do some more. Slowly.
I love True Lies. And then I got kind of like a little, like outside the box, you know, Enter the Dragon. I love that movie, you know, Bruce Lee. Seven Samurai, obviously Kurosawa is a huge influence on a lot of modern filmmakers. And Seven Samurai has been remade like 5 times. And then just because I knew it would piss off Justin and I love it so much, Flash Gordon, because damn is it.
That movie's great. It's very sexual. That is a very sexual movie, David.
It's pretty dirty. Timothy Dalton's in it, and he's Bond, so it's got to ooze sexuality. So that was a quick little rundown for you.
Those are all very good.
Those are great choices.
Yeah, man.
I've seen a lot.
What Justin, it's your thing, man.
Okay.
All right. To camp.
So that is a good one. It's interesting that you guys brought up Indiana Jones, and I only say that because I never classified those movies as action movies. I put them as adventure movies, and in my mind, they're two different things.
Really?
I don't know why, but they are. Like, I in my mind, I think when I think of action movies, I think of, you know, crazy explosions. And Indiana Jones has all these, you know, swearing and lots of bullets and crazy violence. I don't know why, but that is my idea of an action movie. Probably because I'm an 80s kid and, you know, I grew up on Arnold Schwarzenegger. And that's just what I think an action movie is. And I always, always looked at Indiana Jones as an adventure movie. I don't know why, but I never even really thought about saying those words out loud until we were having this conversation.
Is it because of in Indiana Jones, the main goal usually is to obtain or protect some item, as opposed to most of the action films that you're thinking of or listing off are more like, I need to kill this man.
Right.
they use their brains.
Right. But I mean, Indiana Jones has car chases, boat chases, and Nazis and crazy bad guys and supernatural things. It has all the elements of what I would classify as an action movie, but maybe because it's a period piece, I call it an adventure movie. I don't know, but it's not processing in my brain. It's strange. I'm a weirdo.
Yeah, it's totally valid. I never really different. Like, maybe it's because I worked at Blockbuster for all those years and it was action / adventure, but it makes total sense that they would be two different genres. Like, you know, I see adventure kind of being a more plot-driven story to where action's more bang, bang, bang type stuff. So I could totally see a delineation. And what you're saying is not wrong, Justin.
Okay. Yeah, maybe it's just sort of a cops and robbers kind of mentality with me in action movies. Especially since that sort of genre was just over the top in the 80s, so that's really all I have to go by. And even so with the 90s with Cameron, just because he knows how to make an incredible action movie. But I'm probably I'm gonna have to go with Starship Troopers. That is just bar none my favorite action movie. It has it in my mind. It has it all. It has the comedy. It has the violence. It has spaceships, hordes of baddies, a billion bullets. It's just an incredible just story. And I realized that it is based off of a book, so it's somebody else's idea. But for me, just sitting in that theater, I was literally blown away. I just could not ask for more in a movie, and I love it to this day. And it is just a big part of me. Came out November 7th, 1997. I'll never forget it. And I owned a couple of different copies of the movie, and I watch it a couple times a year, and every time I do, I either notice something different or I can still laugh. So when you said timeless, to me, that also goes with the laughs and the comedy, and it still sticks with me to this day. And and even though a lot of the performances were cheesy, I think Michael Ironside just sort of grounds it. Even though it's a total crazy movie, he's sort of just that rock in the movie that brings it credibility, if that makes sense. And it's just a lot of fun.
So why haven't we gotten our matching Kill 'Em All tattoos yet then?
I know, right?
Next Comic-Con, Kill 'Em All on our arms.
Death from above. Death from above. Love it, love it, love it. But if I got to add another one, you know, sort of on the lines of the adventure/fantasy, you know, the Lord of the Rings movies, the Lord of the Rings trilogy, those movies are just incredible. And I feel like they're in a class of their own, but tons of action, tons of adventure, and they just, I don't know if they get any better than that. And and still going back to this, when I watched that video about Terminator 2, that is a perfect movie, and there's nothing wrong with it. It's got some very horrifying elements, nuclear war, machines, this unstoppable force. We thought that the Terminator was unstoppable before. Now they can explode and come back together again. There isn't even a lot of killing in the movie, per se, because it's really just, you know, him wounding a lot of the bad guys. Or at least the cops, let's say. So it doesn't even have like a lot of hardcore violence. It's definitely a different tone from the first movie. The only people that I can think of that really die are a couple people in that mental hospital, the foster parents, and then sort of just the Terminators at the very, very end. If you take away the nuclear explosion and where all of LA gets blown up, and then Miles Dyson.
Minor detail.
Yeah, Miles Dyson. I guess he gets shot up pretty bad, but.
Did they define action movie in that article or video you'd watched?
No, it's just an action movie. But I mean, I could find a place for Point Break in that list of mine. You know, you say when we say top 10, I could think of 10 incredible action movies that I would, you know, take with me on a desert island and be happy for the rest of my life. It's hard to pick one.
Yeah, I mean, you got Aliens movies.
Absolutely.
I mean, you can even put maybe the first Iron Man in that conversation. You got the Bourne movies.
Gladiator's pretty cool.
Yeah. Mad Max.
Yeah. Fury Road, John Wick. Yes, incredible movies. Incredible. And those are new.
I was worried about picking one that was new, but you're greatest of all time or something, and so I was going, oh, how far back should I go?
Yeah, there's been some really good movies lately, and Fury Road, that is just a miracle that movie was made somehow. I don't even know how it was done. That has got to be one of the most ambitious movies I've ever seen. Oh, man, anything else?
That's all I got.
Your cricket?
That was so fun again.
He's a big fan of Five Goes West.
Oh, okay, there you go. You know, I used to cry in an American Tale when this nice little refugee family got separated. And,
very timely for today, actually.
And I know, and they're apart, but they're both singing somewhere out there. I used to get so emotional. I would cry and cry and cry. I felt so bad for that little mouse. I got it rough. The sicker than him, mice only had to deal with needles and cats.
And that owl.
And that great owl.
Eating a moth.
Yeah.
Never that's... seen something so scary as a
it's like, why
animated
is your...
owl eating a moth.
Yeah, why is your head upside down? You got problems.
Head's not on straight.
Pop some pills. Have you seen The Secret of Nim, Will?
Yeah.
Oh, that's man.
The escaped rats that were tested on, they're smarter.
Yeah, I fucking love that movie.
That was great. I think I read a book
yeah.
for that probably as well.
The, yeah, the book was Mrs. Frisbee and the Rats of Nim, I think is what it was
there
called.
There you go.
But it's Brisby in the animated Don Bluth film.
Oh, it's not like you just remember it wrong, like the Berenstain
no,
Bears?
No, they had to make a change. The fucking Berens. Is it? What is it?
Yeah,
anyway?
Exactly. What is it? You don't
with
know.
An A. We remembered it with an E, but it's actually with an A.
Stain.
Yeah, it's Berenstain Bears.
They not Jewish bears?
I guess not.
Apparently not.
Berenstain.
I would have lost a lot of money. If someone would have came to me and said, like, I'll give you $1 million if it's Berenstain. I'd be like, sweet, done.
Yeah, that's too
take
bad.
A cashier's check, please. Ah, well, thanks for joining us for another great episode of the Geek Galaxia Podcast. Make sure to join us next week when I'm sure we'll talk all about the finale of Game of Thrones, where we learn that the wall comes down, that the walkers are in Westeros, and that Cersei has made it through the entirety of Season 7, and I can go a happy man into Season 8. Because, you know, if the world ends in between 7 and 8, then Cersei never loses the Iron Throne, and she is the winner of Game of Thrones. So, but make sure to like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter at Geeky Legacy, and go to geekylegacy.com for your geek news and reviews. See ya.
And the Pixelated Podcast.
And the fucking money.
And the Berenstain Bears.com.